TUC Radio, Time of Useful Consciousness.
How is climate change affecting the recent heat waves? At the end of July 2018, climatesignals.org brought together three eminent climate scientists via Skype. They exchanged ideas on the impacts of global warming as they are now, quote, playing out in real time. Mike Mann is director of the Earth System Science Center at Pennsylvania State University. Jennifer Francis is research professor at Rutgers University's Institute of Marine and Coastal Sciences. And Noah Diffenbaugh is the Kara J. Foundation professor at Stanford University. They discuss the recent heat waves around the globe and how they connect with a changing jet stream pattern. First to comment is Professor Michael Mann. Dr. Mann is author of more than 200 peer-reviewed publications, numerous op-eds and commentaries, and four books, including Dire Predictions, Understanding Climate Change, and The Madhouse Effect, How Climate Change Denial is Threatening Our Planet, Destroying Our Politics, and Driving Us Crazy. Here's his response to the question, how is climate change affecting the recent heat waves? He's followed by Professor Jennifer Francis.
I'm happy to take the first stab at that. You know, it's not rocket science. You make the Earth hotter, you're going to have more extreme heat. You're going to have longer periods of extreme heat. You're going to have more intense heat. And that's what we're seeing. And it's not surprising that as we continue to warm the planet, as we continue to put these greenhouse gases into the atmosphere, so make the planet warmer, you're going to have more prolonged periods of intense heat. You're going to have more extreme heat. And that's what we're seeing this summer. The impacts of climate change are no longer subtle. We're seeing them play out in real time. And what's happening this summer is an excellent example. When you look at the intense heat, the unprecedented wildfires, floods, droughts. Now, there are other mechanisms that may be at work here as well. It isn't just that a hotter planet is going to produce more frequent and intense periods of heat, but we may be changing the circulation of the atmosphere. And our own research suggests that climate change, and in particular, the melting of Arctic sea ice and the warming of the Arctic, is actually changing the jet stream in a way that leads to more persistent extreme meanders in the jet stream in the summer. And that gives us these blocking high pressure systems where we see intense heat. It gives us these troughs, these low pressure areas that stay put day after day, giving us excessive rainfall and extreme flooding. So it isn't just the fact that a warmer planet is warmer, it's also changing the atmospheric circulation in a way that may be giving us these very persistent extreme events.
So I would just jump in and add that over the last week and maybe longer, we've seen the exact kinds of patterns that Mike is describing, where we've had this very undulating jet stream in place with big north-south swings all around the northern hemisphere, particularly over the continents. And it's tough to relate it directly to what's going on in the Arctic, but it's certainly consistent with what Mike is describing. In addition to those big undulations, we've also seen the jet stream split over North America and over Europe. And if you look at a map of the jet stream today or any time over the last week or two, you'll see that this split characteristic has been there. And when I say split, I mean part of it is going to the north and traveling along the coast of the Arctic, and the other part is farther south. And some of Mike's research and his colleagues have suggested that when the jet stream does this split type of a feature, it tends to trap the weather patterns, the weather systems between those splits, and makes them very stagnant and persistent. And they've connected that to a lot of the most extreme events that we've seen over the last couple of decades. That kind of mechanism seems to be playing a role and increasing over time.
That was Dr. Jennifer Francis, research professor at Rutgers University Institute of Marine and Coastal Sciences. Her research interests are the connections between rapid Arctic warming and weather patterns in mid-latitudes, particularly extreme weather events, causes and impacts of Arctic sea ice loss, and the link to accelerated melt of the Greenland ice sheet. Next up is Noah Diffenbaugh, Kara J. Foundation professor at Stanford University. He studies and writes about the climate system, including processes by which climate change could impact agriculture, water resources, and human health. Dr. Diffenbaugh is currently editor-in-chief of the peer-reviewed journal Geophysical Research Letters.
One of the real threats of heat waves is not just the very hot temperatures that we see in the daytime, but the fact that night temperatures don't drop to comfortable levels, to levels that allow us to sleep comfortably. It actually becomes a severe health threat, especially for the elderly and the young. When temperatures just don't cool down, your body doesn't have a chance to recuperate from the extreme heat that you've experienced during the daytime. We just set a record in North Africa for the highest low temperature, the highest nighttime minimum temperature on record, 109 degrees Fahrenheit. That was the lowest temperature that was seen in a location in Africa. And 109 degrees Fahrenheit is hot enough just as a daytime maximum temperature, but that was a nighttime minimum temperature. That is a real health threat, obviously. We have difficulty coping with that sort of extreme heat, especially when it stays warm throughout the night, like it's doing this summer in many regions.
And especially in countries that don't have access generally to cooling, air conditioning, or, you know, any relief from that kind of a heat.
That's right.
So I think one thing that, you know, is important to keep in mind as these individual events unfold, one is that as scientists, we're, you know, very careful to diagnose each event individually and the conditions that create each event individually. And overall, globally, what we're seeing is exactly what has been predicted for decades. So the warming of the planet as a whole is leading to warming of individual regions. The warming of those individual regions is upping the odds that when heat waves happen, that they're hotter, more severe. It's upping the odds that the atmospheric and ocean conditions that create heat waves, when those conditions occur, that they produce more severe events, in some cases more prolonged events. This is the warming of the nighttime temperatures, you know, that we're seeing. This is also a very robust prediction of a warming climate. So these are all at the global scale, you know, what we should expect, and in fact what has been predicted for decades. So not only is it consistent with global warming, but it's exactly what has been forecast.
Yeah, to add to that, it's sort of troubling as a scientist when you're studying this major threat, the threat of human-caused climate change. It's disconcerting in a sense to see our predictions coming true, because of course we warned of this decades ago, and had we acted on climate change decades ago, we wouldn't be seeing the extreme and dangerous weather events around the world that we're seeing this summer. So that's a huge lost opportunity, the fact that we didn't act on this problem decades ago when we knew it was emerging. The good news is that there is still time to avert even more catastrophic impacts on climate change, even more deadly extreme weather events. But obviously we have to act now. We have to shift away from fossil fuels to renewable energy.
And I would just add to that some of the impacts of these extreme events are unfolding and starting to affect people and the ecosystem in very expensive and damaging ways. So if there's any silver lining to this dark cloud, it would be that I think more and more people now are recognizing that the impacts are affecting them personally, and that more and more we can connect what's going on to the changing climate system. So every poll that I see that comes out that measures what fraction of the population, especially in the United States, believes what that whether climate change is having an impact and whether humans are causing it, that number keeps growing. And I think it's partly because of these damaging extreme events, and it's costing people money, it's costing people lives, it's costing their own property, and climate change is affecting people today. It's not this distant problem for their grandchildren.
Yeah, I mean, who are you going to believe? The climate change denying talking head on Fox News or your own two eyes?
Those eyes have to be open, however.
That's right. And that's what we're all trying to do, make sure that people do open their eyes. Mm-hmm.
You are listening to a conversation between three climate scientists, recorded by Skype on July 27, 2018. They are Mike Mann, Director of the Earth System Science Center at Pennsylvania State University, Jennifer Francis, Research Professor at Rutgers University's Institute of Marine and Coastal Sciences, and Noor Diffenbaugh, Kara J. Foundation Professor at Stanford University. The discussion was organized by Climate Signals and moderated by Markea Thomas. Here's her next question about the media. Michael Mann is the first to respond.
So what's something reporters don't understand about heat waves?
It's easy to comprehend, to understand that as you warm up the planet, you're going to get more intense heat. But that's just sort of the simple part of the problem. In reality, climate change, as we've talked about, is also changing the behavior of the jet stream. It's changing the atmospheric circulation. It may be leading to more of these blocking high pressure systems that remain stationary. And that's when you get unprecedented heat spells, when the same high pressure region covers Europe or North America day after day, and the sun continues to bake those regions, that's when you get unprecedented heat waves. And so it's really a few different things working together. Just the fact that higher global temperatures mean more intense heat periods, more extended periods of heat, and the fact that we're changing the pattern of the atmospheric flow in a way that gives us those stagnant air masses that are associated with unprecedented heat, like what we've seen in Europe this week.
I think also humans have been measuring temperature for a long time. So, from thermometers in different parts of the world, and we've now had satellites orbiting the planet for, about almost four decades, returning, measurements of temperature around the world, essentially continuously. And so scientists now have a very long record of measurements of temperature. And what that means is that we can analyze long-term trends, not only in the global temperature, but in the temperature of different parts of the world. And as a result of those very rich, comprehensive observations, we can now test hypotheses about how global warming potentially influences individual extreme events around the world. And what we find, when scientists conduct those objective, skeptical analyses, testing those rigorous hypotheses, what we find is that global warming has already put a thumb on the scale for a number of different kinds of extremes. Around the world, we find a human fingerprint of global warming at more than 80% of the surface area of the globe for the hottest temperature on record. And so for the hottest heat event, global warming has already put a thumb on the scale at more than 80% of the world. So we're not yet at the point where every single record hot event clearly has a human fingerprint, but we're getting awfully close.
Let me add one cautionary note here. The sort of work that NOAA and other scientists have done in attempting to attribute to human activity of these extreme events is very important work. And it has helped inform our understanding of how climate change is indeed stacking the deck towards these more extreme events. But those analyses, of course, can be no better than the models that are used to conduct them. And climate models have come a long way, and there's reason to take their predictions very seriously. But there are certain areas where the models may not be as reliable as other areas. And one of those areas does have to do with the behavior of the jet stream, and in particular, this phenomenon that my colleagues and I have been studying that's called planetary wave resonance, but it has to do with the fact that under certain circumstances, the jet stream can undulate more wildly than normal. You get larger meanders in the jet stream, and those meanders are very stable. They don't lose energy, and so they build, and they can sort of stay in place day after day. And you get these very persistent weather events, very persistent low pressure areas with extreme rainfall, very persistent high pressure regions with extreme heat, and they stay in the same location day after day. Our analyses suggest that the state-of-the-art climate models used, for example, in the most recent assessment of the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, the IPCC, are not yet at the point where we can actually diagnose this phenomenon in the models themselves. We have to turn to other alternative approaches, more process-based approaches, to understand how climate change may be impacting those types of phenomena. And our own analyses suggest that because of that, the models may be overly conservative. When we use the models to assess the human impact on extreme weather events, they may not be capturing, in fact, we're fairly confident that they're not capturing, this other component that is adding to the increase in these extreme weather events.
And I would just follow up with the original question that you asked about what the media doesn't understand completely, perhaps, and that is, goes back to what Mike was describing, how when you've got one kind of extreme in one place around the Northern Hemisphere, most likely you're going to find extremes of other types also occurring at the same time because of these undulations that happen in the jet stream. So those waves in the jet stream, those north-south swings in the jet stream, are what create the weather around the Northern Hemisphere that we all experience down at the surface. And when it's crazy and bizarre in one place, say a heat wave in one area, you can bet that somewhere else it's overly cold, which in the summer doesn't get reported because everybody's happy about that. But you'll also find areas that are getting persistent rain, and that's been happening, for example, along the Atlantic seaboard. You know, Washington, D.C. has been pretty much underwater for the last couple of weeks. So I think that's something that the media doesn't really understand too well yet, but I think, you know, we're working on you, and I think, you know, more and more we're finding some of the journalists that we talk to often are really understanding this now.
Yeah, I would add to that just some specific examples of what Jen was describing. When you have these very unusual jet stream patterns, you have unusual weather that's correlated around the entire hemisphere. And while Japan was experiencing record flooding, parts of Europe and North America were experiencing record heat. In 2010, when Moscow had this unprecedented heat and these unprecedented wildfires, Pakistan was experiencing their worst flooding on record. That isn't a coincidence. It's because these perturbations in the jet stream have a hemispheric scale, and we see extreme weather all around the entire Northern Hemisphere, like we are seeing this July.
That was Professor Michael Mann adding to the intriguing question of how the meanders of the jet stream affect our weather. Next up is moderator Markea Thomas with her last question.
And what would you like to see covered more in the media? What should they be talking about?
Well, I think Jennifer just made an excellent point. It's the fact that these aren't coincidences. These aren't isolated coincidences that we're seeing these extreme weather events all around the Northern Hemisphere right now, this summer. It's part of a coherent change in the atmospheric circulation that almost certainly has a climate change component to it. What is good is that we are seeing the media start to connect the dots when it comes to climate change and extreme weather. The extreme weather we're seeing right now this summer, clearly we can see the fingerprint of human activity in these extreme weather events. And some media outlets have connected the dots, too many have not. In fact, there was an analysis last week that looked at sort of the prestige press and the legacy media, sort of our main media outlets in the United States. And very few of them actually commented on climate change as they covered these unprecedented extreme weather events. We've got to get better at that. We have to bring the journalistic community along in recognizing that they do have a responsibility to connect those dots, because that's where the rubber hits the road. When it comes to the threat of climate change, the damage that's being done by climate change, we have to understand that it isn't some subtle, far-off problem, polar bears in the Arctic. It is destruction and loss of life and massive upheaval where we live today associated with extreme weather events that have been made more extreme by climate change.
And I would just add, I think it's a huge communication opportunity as well, because the public loves to hear about extreme weather. I mean, it's everybody loves talking about the weather. The headlines are the extremes, the damage, and so forth. Then if you can make that connection to some aspect of climate change in, you know, a reasonable way, in some way that, you know, doesn't extend the science too far, it's that opportunity to connect with the public, because you've already got them listening with the extremes that are happening. And then you can slide a little spinach into the cheeseburger, is how I like to think of it. So the cheeseburger is the extreme event. Everybody loves that. And then you just slip a little spinach in there and you educate the public gradually about how science is learning that what you just witnessed as an extreme event does have this component that's contributed by climate change.
Let me just riff briefly off of the eloquent statement by Jennifer. Not only can we talk about the weather, we can actually do something about it.
Yeah.
We can do something about the path that we're on towards more extreme and deadly weather events. We can change that path by acting on climate change.
Perfect. Thank you. Again, thank you for joining us. There has been a lot of good, very solid information shared today. And for more information about heat waves and extreme heat, head to climatesignals.org and be sure to follow Climate Signals on Twitter.
You heard a conversation among three climate scientists recorded by Skype on July 27, 2018. They were Mike Mann, director of the Earth System Science Center at Pennsylvania State University, Jennifer Francis, research professor at Rutgers University's Institute of Marine and Coastal Sciences, and Noah Diffenbaugh, KRJ Foundation professor at Stanford University. The discussion was organized by climatesignals.org and moderated by Markea Thomas. On the next program by TUC Radio, you will hear a solo lecture by Professor Jennifer Francis on crazy weather and the Arctic meltdown. How are they connected? She spoke at the New England Aquarium in the fall 2017 lecture season. Here's a short preview.
So I focused mainly on the Arctic itself, how it was changing, why it was changing, and it's really only in the last 5 years that I've started to focus my research on not just the Arctic meltdown, which I'm going to talk about a lot tonight, but also how it's connected to our weather patterns. We're changing the Arctic so much and so fast that I thought there's got to be an impact on the rest of the circulation system and affecting our weather patterns here. But the really tricky question is how these two things are connected to each other. So that's what I'm going to try to explain to you tonight. I'm sure you're all well aware that Mother Nature has just gone berserk in the last few years. We've seen all kinds of extreme weather events transpiring all over the Northern Hemisphere. The coast of the UK has had some of the worst winters they've ever had in the last few years, just bombarded by storm after storm after storm. There are places in northern Japan where they're used to getting a fair bit of snow, but in this particular winter of 2012, they had more snow than they've ever had. Last summer, we had record flooding in Louisiana and many other places. We all remember that crazy winter of 2015, right? Record-breaking snow in Boston, which is saying a lot. And in Europe, they had a heck of a summer with all kinds of heat waves in central part of Europe, southern Europe, a lot of forest fires, while the UK and Scandinavia had an incredibly wet, cold summer. So all those examples all had something in common. These are all the types of extreme events that have to do with weather patterns that have become persistent. They've become stuck. All right, so I want to step back first and kind of set the stage a little bit here. I'm sure most of you here are very aware of the fact that our climate is changing. Well, you've probably heard from some people that are a little bit skeptical of what's going on right now that the climate has always changed and this is just a natural cycle. Well, let's take a look at that. Here we are looking at two graphs, two curves here. The red is what the Earth's temperature has been doing over the last 400,000 years or so. All right? You can clearly see that it's been up and down over that time period. And those ups and downs in temperature, we understand very well what caused those. It's because of shifts in the Earth's orbit around the sun. And they're very regular. When the temperature's warm back then, that's when we had what we call an interglacial period, when the Earth was warm. And when it gets colder, and you'll notice it's only several degrees that separates those, that was an ice age. So the Earth has fluctuated back and forth between these warm periods and ice ages. Along with that, the blue curve there is showing you how much carbon dioxide there was in the atmosphere at the same time. And you'll see that they're very closely related to each other. Until you get to the present time, here we are with over 400 parts per million of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere right now. You can see it's nothing like it's been in approximately 500,000 years. We are completely off the chart. And we know exactly where that carbon dioxide came from. It came from mostly burning fossil fuels. What you may also notice is that the temperature hasn't caught up with that carbon dioxide yet. There's a big lag in the system. We put that carbon dioxide in the atmosphere so fast that the Earth has not had time to catch up to being in equilibrium with that carbon dioxide in the atmosphere. But one thing we do know is the last time we saw carbon dioxide levels this high, which was many millions of years ago, we know that the globe was several degrees warmer than it is now, and we know that sea levels were tens of feet higher. So this is where we're going.
That was Dr. Jennifer Francis, research professor at Rutgers University Institute of Marine and Coastal Sciences. Her research interests are the connections between rapid Arctic warming and weather patterns in mid-latitudes, and the impacts of Arctic sea ice loss on accelerated melt of the Greenland ice sheet. For the full lecture, please tune in when TUC Radio returns next week. You can hear this program again for free on TUC Radio's website, tucradio.org. Look for the newest programs page. There you can also subscribe to weekly free podcasts. My name is Maria Gelöden. Thank you for listening.